Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We are Maggie and Perloff. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. And we have been fully football nerding out. We have nerd callers, nerd hosts. It's been a sort of a cap seminar. You know, we've learned a lot today, but is this one of the shows where you sort of need a calculator to follow along?
I think you got to carry the one, that's for sure. Here's something not nerdy. That's Mike McCarthy. Nobody thinks he's a nerd.
Wait, you know, Mike McCarthy's not a nerd?
No. That time that he took a year off and spent it studying at the analytics of football, I think he was actually like on a beach somewhere. But yeah, that's me. Mike McCarthy took to the podium today, and he was asked about his job status. Apparently, he was spending time with Jerry Jones after the game and met with Jerry on Monday. He described their conversations as very positive. So all's well that ends well. Like nothing ever happened. All right. He also said, with regards to the final play, the infamous final play, the Dak Prescott scramble for 17 yards with 14 seconds left on the clock and them not being able to spike the ball, wouldn't have done anything different.
What?
There you go, Cowboys fans.
Well,
enjoy your offseason, everybody.
Jerry Jones wouldn't fire Jason Garrett after countless 8-8 seasons. He's not going to fire Mike McCarthy. You know, a guy who has over for sleepovers after a 12-win season.
I forgot about the sleepover.
I
love when people talk about, like, rich people having sleepovers, like they're sharing a bathroom. You know, like, Mike McCarthy was probably in a different wing of Jerry's house. They definitely didn't see each other during the sleepover, right? They're not crossing each other as they go to get a drink of water in the middle of the night.
They definitely had pillow fights. They sat up and chatted all night. Talked about girls. I don't know. What do you do on a sleepover?
Prank call people.
Yeah, they prank call. They had four pizzas. It was awesome. The two things I always remember about Mike McCarthy.
Three for Mike. Sorry.
The sleepover and that outfit. How do you describe that outfit that he wore this winter? It was like a camel hair jacket and a matching chapeau.
It's called cashmere.
Oh.
Look it up.
And
learn about it.
I disagree. I think Mike McCarthy's a pretty big nerd. Okay, I don't know how much you guys know about me and my background here, but
tell us.
I went to Lower Merion High School.
And
if that name sounds familiar, it's because every time Kobe Bryant was introduced before a Lakers game, they said Lower Merion High School, did not go to college. I'm very proud of my suburban Philadelphia roots. And it's funny, our next guest wrote a book on Kobe. Before we get to that, Maggie, I can't tell you, there's not that much interesting about me, but when I say I went to Lower Merion, everybody knows my high school.
Like, big conversation starter.
And nobody knows your high school, right? What was your high school?
Binghamton High School. Yeah, I got nothing.
And who's the famous alum? You or?
No. The most famous alum from my high school is Rod Serling.
Oh, the Twilight Zone. That's pretty good.
He created the Twilight Zone, which should inform everybody about where I'm from. The inspiration for the Twilight Zone is also where I grew up.
Best athlete out of Binghamton?
King Rice.
King Rice, did he even make the NBA, North Carolina point guard?
Listen, he was a great college player.
There's no pros out of Binghamton, New York?
He won the state championship his senior year of high school. We didn't all have Kobe Bryant going to our high school, Perloff, but I think what makes it even more special for you is that you played against Kobe. You're bearing the lead here, as they say in journalism, and your brother played with Kobe on the Lower Merion.
Yeah, they were on the same team. Kobe dunked on my head at the Jewish Youth Center on City Line Avenue.
I mean, who gets to say that?
Actually, a lot of people who played in that era at the
Most
Jewish Youth Center.
Most people in the greater Philadelphia area.
So I could tell you how excited I was when my friend and a Philadelphia Inquirer columnist, great writer, Mike Sielski, it was announced he was doing a book, The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality. I was so excited. I'm so excited to have him on because the book was not only about Kobe, but it was like a journey through my childhood. Mike, welcome aboard. But before we talk about
congrats
Kobe.
Congrats on the book.
Yeah, congrats. And we're so excited for you. You just got to tell us real quick. We got to get the Jalen Hurts question out of the way. Are people in Philadelphia glad or are they mad that the team is bringing Jalen Hurts back as a starter?
I think people, first of all, thank you so much, guys. It's great to be with you. I think people are still skeptical that Howie Roseman told them the truth today. I think I think the Eagles are probably heading into this offseason saying to themselves, yeah, if we have to bring Jalen Hurts back, we'll bring Jalen Hurts back. But if there's a trade to be made for someone like Russell Wilson, we will jump on that too. So I think the initial reaction is, yeah, fine. But there's skepticism that the Eagles will actually, you know, fully commit to Hurts.
Oh, yeah. Mike, you and I are lockstep. I saw that. I was like, sure. Let's check back in a couple weeks here. You got those three first-round draft picks burning a hole in your pocket. Howie Roseman is always, you know, wheeling and dealing, as a good general manager should. So I only took that as with a big grain of salt.
So wait, well,
go ahead, Mike. I was just going to say, guys, no, somebody reminded Howie at the press conference today that when he gave this similar press conference at the end of last season, he was asked about Carson Wentz and whether Carson Wentz was going to be back as the Eagles quarterback. And Howie had a kind of a memorable quote about that's like taking one of your fingers off your hand or something like that. And, you know, we know how that turned out. So, again, skepticism about Jalen Hurts' future with the Eagles as their starter.
Right. These 23-year-old alternate Pro Bowl quarterbacks who lead a bad team to playoffs grow on trees. I hate my city and how much I hate the starting quarterback. I'm used to that. But I do love your book on Kobe Bryant. Mike, I got to tell you, this is very emotional for me to read. And because so many people in that book were part of my life. We had the same eighth grade coach. You interviewed Dr. Smith, who was like my hero. I've read a million Kobe stories. So you went so deep. Tell me a little bit about your process. Did you just go and talk to everybody in Lower Merion, people at the school, old friends? Like, how did you start on this topic of Kobe Bryant's sort of origin story?
So first of all, thank you for that, Andrew. So 2 months after he dies in January 2020, 2 months later, after writing several columns about him, I kind of got the idea, you know, and Andrew, you know this as well as anybody. Philadelphia is very parochial. It's kind of an under-the-dome sort of situation when it comes to sports and the way we interact with each other. And I thought, you know, the story of Kobe in the Philadelphia area and at Lower Merion is really well-known to the people of that area, but I'm not sure how well-known it is to people around the country and even around the world. So I thought of this. My elevator pitch for the book was, this will be Batman Begins for the Black Mamba. This will be Kobe's origin story. So I was in contact for a long time with a couple people who were close to him, Greg Downer, his high school coach at Lower Merion, still there, still the head coach there with the Aces, and a guy named Jeremy Treatment, who was a confidant of Kobe's when Kobe was in high school, kind of an assistant coach / media relations representative for him. And from those two guys, I pitched them the idea and said, if I do this, would you guys be willing to talk to me and help me? And they said yes, and then I was off, and I was trying to track down anyone and everyone I could from Lower Merion. I was going to the Lower Merion Historical Society and reading back copies of the student newspaper and the yearbooks and just trying to find as many people as I could from that time in his life who were willing to talk to me.
Mike Stielski is our guest. He's written the book, The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality. And a week from today is January 26th. That will be the 2-year anniversary of the death of Kobe Bryant in the helicopter accident. And, you know, Mike, you got your hands on these really unique, like, archival footage is probably how I'd describe it, right? Interviews of Kobe when he was a teenager. What was he talking about in those interviews, and what did those tapes show you?
So, really interesting story, Maggie. It's a long one. I'll make it quick. Jeremy Treatment and Kobe had tried to collaborate on a book back when Kobe was in his senior year at Lower Merion and his first year with the Lakers. The book didn't come off. They weren't able to find a publisher, but Jeremy held on to the tapes and transcripts of some of these interviews. So fast forward 25 years, he finds the tapes. No one's ever heard them in 25 years. No, they've been in his garage. He's cleaning out his garage, and he finds them, and he gives them to me. So I've got the voice and the thoughts of 17, 18, 19-year-old Kobe Bryant describing to Jeremy the first time he meets Michael Jordan and what it's like, the setting of it, you know, before and after a Sixers game in 1996 at the Spectrum. He's talking about what he thinks of Del Harris, his first coach with the Lakers. I can tell you, not much. He did not think much of Del Harris, and it was quite colorful in expressing that. He talks about what it's like to, what it was like to make the decision to jump straight from high school to the NBA at a time when such a thing was kind of unheard of for a kid of his background and, you know, him being a guard. You know, he wasn't Kevin Garnett who had done it the year before. He was a wispy kind of guard. So that those recordings really informed a lot of my writing and the storytelling. I was really able to get inside Kobe's head at that time of his life.
I have a theory, Mike, on Kobe Bryant. I think his athleticism is not elite. It's elite, but it's not one of the top 10 of all time. I think it is mental background, which I kind of read in your book, sort of how he formed this Kobe personality, which we saw not only when he was playing, but after he was playing, he was already starting such a successful journey. How much of that was sort of Lower Merion and the people around him and some of the teachers around him that made him into this incredibly competitive, incredibly smart, sort of, he just had a mental edge over everyone in the NBA, it seemed to me.
What you're asking about, Andrew, is was it nature or was it nurture? And my theory on Kobe is that it was 50-50.
Hmm.
You're talking about a kid who, you know, was just born with this incredible drive and understanding deep within himself, he knew what he wanted to be. He wanted to be the greatest basketball player in the world, and he was committed at the earliest possible age to doing that. But he also had the benefit of some, you know, circumstances that were favorable to that allowed him to become that person. He was born in the kind of family where his father was an NBA player and his mother was the disciplinarian of the household, and they lived in Italy for 8 years and then came back to a very diverse community in Lower Merion that allowed him to kind of move in different social circles. And there's a lot there to him. I think you're right, and it's a combination of both of those things, both of his environment and just who he was kind of intrinsically.
You know, I sat with Joe Bryant at a lot of my brother's games. Joe Bryant, of course, is Kobe Bryant's dad. Jelly Bean Bryant, former Sixer. He was a bit of a goofball, Mike. I don't know if any of your research showed that, but he was not like the killer Mamba guy. To me, he had a lot of fun and had a different personality than Kobe. Does that sound true?
That's 100% true. And in some ways, I think Kobe, as much as Kobe loved his dad, and they were very close, and Joe was Kobe's biggest basketball influence when Kobe was young, I think Kobe also looked at Joe as a cautionary tale. Hmm. Because you're right, Joe was kind of a ne'er-do-well. Joe would be late for the team bus when he was playing with the Houston Rockets and miss practice. And, you know, he didn't have the Mamba mentality in the way that Kobe did. Pam Bryant did when it came to raising her family and protecting Kobe and standing up for them, but it wasn't Joe. And so I think Kobe, to a large degree, saw himself on a mission to kind of redeem his family's good name when it came to basketball. His dad was talented. His dad was kind of bitter that he hadn't gotten the chance in the NBA that he felt he deserved. He was 6'9", but really talented. And back then, if you were 6'9", they put you in the post. Nobody knew who Magic Johnson was yet until Magic came along. And I think Kobe took that all in and said to himself, I'm going to restore the Bryant name to royalty in basketball. That's part of my mission. At least it was when he was young.
Wow. Mike Sielski is joining us. He's got a new book. It's called The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality. You know, Mike, I'm curious about your process because Kobe's legacy is complicated for a lot of people because of the rape accusation, the rape case in Colorado that ultimately got settled and Kobe did apologize to his accuser over that. And you're doing an origin story, yet you know that years later this happens in his life. How did you approach it?
It was really a point of concern for me at the start of the process, Maggie, because I didn't want this to be a book that came off as, this is about Kobe Bryant, who is the greatest person in the history of people. I wanted this to be a full reckoning of his life. I wanted to be honest and accurate, and I wanted someone to be able to read it and say, okay, from reading this book, I can see how he became the man he became. And I was very fortunate that I did uncover an anecdote, and I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't read the book yet, but I did uncover an anecdote from his time in high school that does kind of touch on what happened in Aurora, Colorado. It just kind of gives you a sense of, oh, okay, there's not a direct line to be drawn or anything like that. But the value of that, finding that anecdote, was it allowed me to not have to be ham-handed in kind of shoehorn discussion of Aurora, Colorado into the narrative. You know, I knew I was going to have to address it. It would have been wrong of me not to address it completely, to just overlook it. That wouldn't have been right. So finding that anecdote allowed me to just kind of seamlessly put it in the narrative, kind of leave it there for people to make their own judgments about it, but allow them to understand, okay, you know, the writer here, me, is committed to telling you the full story of Kobe.
Oh, yeah. I read it, Mike, and you're absolutely true. It does not come off like a glorification of Kobe Bryant at all. Although, if you're a Kobe fan, I think you'll find the book very satisfying. Mike, I don't really want to do this on air, but I have a pitch for you for the sequel to Rise, okay. To Rise, of Kobe Bryant's story.
I have no doubt it was going to come to this.
How about Sid, the story of Andrew Perloff, the Lower Merion High School bench warmer actually a very talented Lower Merion Aces. I played at the Narberth League. I played at the South Ardmore League. I was at every single place, every coach, every league. I was there. I scored 3 points a game, and Kobe scored 30 points a game. I don't know. Is there an Andrew Perloff origin story you think that will sell?
McLovin, the real story.
Yeah.
Like McLovin, the mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew, let me tell you, I love you, man. But unless you were doing what Kobe was doing, unless you were driving around to the courts in and around Philly, and unless you had a friend yelling at you while you shot baskets, you're soft. You go to a suburban white school. You couldn't cut it in the Philly Public League. I'm not sure that the story would come off. Well, it's just my own.
I'll volunteer to do that.
Yeah, Maggie could do that. That's all true. I am soft, and I could not cut it in the Philadelphia Public League. Mike, did you go to the Kobe Bryant games that were like the Palestra, the big games? Remember, I don't know, Maggie, if you remember, it was games that were on TV when he was a junior and a senior. What were those games like? Were they as big as they seemed? I saw them on TV. I was away at the time, but it seemed awesome.
They were pretty big. And put them in context, too, Andrew. Like, you know, the Sixers stunk back then, right? Like, the draft that Kobe comes out, the Sixers have the number one overall pick because they're the worst team in the NBA, or at least one of them. And so the Lower Merion Aces in 1995-96 are like the traveling roadshow of Philadelphia basketball. We've got the number one high school player in the country in our backyard. He's filling up the Palestra against great teams, against Coatesville, which had Rip Hamilton, and Chester, which is one of the four or five historically top programs in the state of Pennsylvania.
Rasheed Wallace.
And Rasheed Wallace had just finished up at Simon Gratz. They were huge. He should have been a bigger story even than he was. If you go back and look at the coverage of Kobe back then, when he's a freshman, sophomore, junior, there isn't a whole lot written about him. It's only at the end of his junior year when he really starts to blossom that the media in town kind of caught on to the fact that they had this incredible player and this incredible story right in their backyard.
Man, Mike Sielski is joining us. Just wrapping up here, Mike, and again, congratulations on the book, The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality. What's the most Philly thing about Kobe?
Ooh, I think his, just that Mamba mentality, Maggie. I mean, if Kobe had ended up with the Sixers, he would have been beloved here. He would have been a god. You know, there's so much of it that has been made about his relationship with Philly fans. And, you know, in the 2001 finals with the Lakers, he said he wanted to cut the Sixers and their fans' hearts out. And he was booed at the All-Star game and all of that. I think that so much of that is a function of the fact that people around Philadelphia saw in Kobe what they wanted from any kind of athlete, that will to win, that talent, that drive. And they knew that they would have loved him if he played for them, and because he didn't, they hated him, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so he finally got a little bit more of that love at the end of his career. I was there the night he played his last game in Philly, and it was nothing but a love fest. But I think that kind of fraught relationship he had with the city was born out of the fact that if he had played here for his NBA career, they would have loved him unconditionally.
I totally agree. And Mike, you know, his speech patterns were very Lower Merion, by the way. I have friends who sound exactly like a young Kobe. It's interesting. His mentality, I think the sense of place is underrated with Kobe Bryant. Mike, and the book is doing great. I can't wait to see. I have some thoughts on either the TV series or the movie.
I think we know about the sequel, not The Rise, but the Sid, Perloff story.
If you need some.
I got it. Andrew, I got it. The Fall. Andrew Perloff and the Pursuit of Mediocrity.
That's the person I want to be sitting next to. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for your time. Good luck with the book.
Guys, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
I love it. Thanks. Mike Sielski, the author of The Rise, Kobe Bryant, The Pursuit of Immortality. Wow, his speech patterns? You really do have a Kobe character.
Absolutely. And the teams he mentioned, by the way, as a bench warmer, I love seeing like coats filled because I know we'd be down by 40, like with 10 minutes left the second half. That means Perloff's coming in.
Rip off the warm-ups.
Guys, like I played against a lot of those D1 guys from those schools and they would just dunk on my head. That's the best part about this book. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy, he killed me in that winter tournament. Sit, the Perloff story's coming next.
Well, we've got a lot more coming your way, including one controversial quarterback who got a vote of confidence from his team. Is it real or is it a smokescreen? Maggie and Perloff and you, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Don't move.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Back on Maggie and Perloff, we just talked to Mike Sielski, author of the new Kobe book, Rise. Very interesting. Like I said, Maggie, it was really emotional for me. It's so detailed, like any great book is, and you get a sense of place for Kobe Bryant. And I guess Binghamton, maybe there's a King Rice book.
I'm sure.
2000s North Carolina point guards. but that was a treat having Mike.
I know. I could tell you were very affected by that, like in a good way. It's cool when you get to be that close to a superstar and someone who you got to watch kind of grow up. That's really fun.
I watched dunk on your head. And the thing about him dunking in half court, he was like 16. I'm like, this kid's not good, that good. He weighs like 145 pounds. What's he going to do to me? And then nobody dunked.
And how much did you weigh at the time? Just, you know,
I was
curious.
Out of college. Oh, you know, I got up to like 225. I was bigger in college.
I know, but how tall are you?
I'm 6'4". Right. I'm like 195 now.
Yeah, but like 225, you didn't like totally let yourself go.
I was playing basketball in college, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to kill this kid, this star that everyone's talking about. Nobody dunks on you in half court. It doesn't happen. You don't have any room to run up. He dunked on me like 3 times in a game. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I just got dunked on by a future NBA star. What a claim to fame. And as it turns out, it was probably one of the coolest things that's ever happened
to
me.
Yeah, probably still to this moment, and like you are in Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of success.
I've had like a lot of quarterbacks throw passes at my head.
Yeah.
I've caught passes from real NFL quarterbacks, but Kobe's just different.
Yeah, and especially being where you're from. So that's really cool. Perloff went to the same high school as Kobe Bryant, if you couldn't pick up on that. Now, we want to stay in state. We're going to move away from the Eagles for a second because when Mike Tomlin hits the mic, everybody better pay attention because Tomlin's always dropping gems. So this was him earlier today, I believe. Yesterday? Earlier today. when he was asked about his quarterback and the attributes that he likes to see, more specifically, the mobility of a quarterback.
Mike, I remember when we asked you after the bye week what you noticed while you were watching games, and you said the impact of quarterback mobility. As you look at your quarterback room, as you plan for the future, how important of an element is that have to be for whoever happens to be behind under center next year?
Man, quarterback mobility is valued, not only by me, but everyone. It's just a component of today's game, and increasingly so.
Now, is this just a reaction to how immobile Big Ben was at the end of his career?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's like, all right, we're past the Big Ben goodbye. Like, can we just turn our attention now to the future? And we need a quarterback that can actually scramble a little bit and won't take like 15 seconds.
Right. But is the bar so low there? Is he talking about like getting the next Lamar Jackson? Or is he just talking about somebody who can move 6 feet downfield without tripping over himself?
Well, listen, he'll probably take anything if you ask. I mean, both are better than Ben. And, you know, Ben always got so much, you know, credit for his durability, but he was never like a really super scrambly quarterback.
Yeah, early on.
Well,
let's
early
look at his...
on, they're all, they yes. all can kind of run early
and
on.
He was a former wide receiver. He was fast at Miami, and then it all became big. And then in the last 15 years, nothing.
No, he's just staying in the pocket. I mean, I agree with Tomlin. I don't think he's saying anything that's crazy there. You got to be able to move around, especially if they're going with a young quarterback. And I don't know if they're going to make a play for one of these bigger, you know, QBs that could be on the market, more of a finishing piece, or if they're going to go in the draft and try to find a quarterback there. But, you know, especially early on with these young QBs, if you're not super accurate, being able to run, it helps so much. Now, granted, you expose yourself to injuries, and that's what happened with, like, Daniel Jones, for example, in New York. You know, he has great legs. The arm is coming along. But, you know, he's gotten hurt because he's been scrambling so much and he hasn't been able to really finish a season. So you got to take the good with the bad, but he's totally right. You have to be able to scramble in this day and age.
Right. So why are you not all in on Jalen Hurts with Philadelphia? He's a perfect model of he's a young quarterback. He'll get more accurate, and he's an unbelievable runner.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not all in on Jalen Hurts. I just wonder what the ceiling is, you know, and can he become better when you're going to have teams that are going to force you to throw, like exactly what the Tampa Bay Bucs did, and they got shellacked.
Okay, so Mel Kiper put out a mock draft, and this is interesting because some of the quarterbacks...
Man, wait, I'm sorry. Yeah. Did the clouds part in the heavens? Was this the first mock?
This is Mel 1.0.
Wow. No one told me it was coming today.
Yeah, you know,
it wasn't, McShay 1.0. I didn't get an alert on my phone or anything.
Oh, my God. You didn't turn on ESPN because they were hitting us over the head with Mel today. Mel got, you know, got
it's
out
Mel's
of his basement.
Day.
Yeah. It's going to be Mel's season soon. We are
I'm surprised
a month
we came to work today. Yeah. This is Mel's day.
Well, Mel, and then there's a few other draft analysts out there. If you haven't noticed, it's become a bit of an industry. Oh, it's all Mel for you. So, yeah. But the style of quarterbacks he has around Pittsburgh, he has 18 is Kenny Pickett from Pitt, who can run. Right. He's a good runner, but he's more of a big, strong, closer to Big Ben. Then he has 20, Matt Corral out of Ole Miss going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who's a little guy, very fast, very mobile, got an arm. I mean, he's not a bad thrower by any means. Is that kind of weird to you to go from Big Ben, who's 6'5", to Matt Corral, 6 feet tall? Like, do you think, when I think of Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, I think of big and strong and Iron City and Terry Bradshaw and all these big guys. I don't know if one of these little scrambling guys fits with what that team is.
Well, new era. You know, time to turn the page here for the Steelers. And if they feel like, you know, to me, honestly, I know we're going to see a lot of Pickett and we're going to see a lot of Matt Corral. I see them as a team that's going to try to bring somebody in.
But
I don't know if I see them doing the full start over, even though they have, you know, they could. They definitely could. But I just don't know if I see that. If there's an opportunity to get one of these quarterbacks that could be on the market, I could see them going for it. The only problem is on that side is if you have, say, like a Jimmy Garoppolo or someone like that, maybe even like a Russell Wilson. I don't know how much you want to dream here if you're a Steeler fan. But is the AFC North that appealing for another quarterback to come into?
Well, that's what I was wondering. Like you said, if they get somebody, say they don't get Rodgers, say he says Green Bay, Russell Wilson, I don't see them necessarily getting that guy.
Their offensive line isn't awesome right now. Yeah. They'd have to shore that up, of course. They obviously have Harris, though, so you have the run game. But it's like you're going to go into a division that's notoriously known for being one of the toughest on quarterbacks. Now, I know you can't hit quarterbacks the way you used to, but even still, like, these are tough, drag them out. Like, when the Steelers play the Ravens, when the Steelers play the Bengals, like the Browns, it feels different, even now when you can't even barely touch the quarterback.
No, I absolutely know what you're saying, which makes me think that they're not going to get one of these elite quarterbacks.
They may not.
So do you bring in a Teddy Bridgewater as a veteran? Like, are you excited? Or do you draft one of these guys who's a complete departure from Ben Roethlisberger? I hear Mike Tomlin say mobile quarterback, and I think, wow, I'd love to get Malik Willis out of Liberty, who actually Kuiper has as the first quarterback off the board. Like, it's time to really get going here. Don't bring in a bridge quarterback.
Yeah, you're right. What am I waiting for? I want to play one more cut just quickly from Mike Tomlin, because this guy, it's just amazing when he talks about how Pittsburgh and the Steelers are so global.
All options are on the table, but those decisions are interrelated based on our global needs and the totality of those global needs.
Like, is he working at an Amazon warehouse?
Yeah.
What's the global needs? Like, when I think about global needs, I think about that ship that got stuck in the Suez Canal. I'm like, those people had global needs.
No, this is a supply chain issue or something. I don't understand. Apparently, I don't totally understand Mike Tomlin press conferences. Yes, he gives you some gems. They don't always make sense. You know, at your former station, WFAN, the morning host, Gio, does an incredible Mike Tomlin impersonation.
Yeah, he used to work in Pittsburgh,
Because I guess Mike Tomlin often uses the word global. So it's become a catch-all phrase, team-wide needs. I guess he's saying it's not all about the quarterback.
No,
we got to build a team.
But it's like, are you operating in multiple time zones here? Like, do you speak other languages besides English? What is global about this organization? I mean, maybe you probably find a terrible towel anywhere in the world. Okay, probably. But when I think of the Steelers, I don't think of something global. That's just me. We've hit the bottom of the hour. We're a little late. Our apologies to Rich Ackerman. He's got the CBS Sports Update. Perloff and I are back in just a moment. And coming up next, yes, an apology, a tweet, a takedown. Dallas never disappoints. We'll get you up to speed on the latest drama. Don't move.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, this weekend on CBS, the NFL Divisional Round presented by Intuit TurboTax Live begins Saturday at 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific, when Joe Burrow and the Red Hot Bengals head to Tennessee for a battle with the top-seeded Titans. Then on Sunday at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, it's a highly anticipated rematch for the ages. Josh Allen, the unstoppable Bills offense. This is in the copy, by the way. I am not ad-libbing.
Yeah, right.
Take on the equally unstoppable Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Get set for both games with the NFL Today, the NFL Divisional Round presented by Intuit TurboTax Live this weekend only on CBS.
You going to watch that game?
Probably like through my fingers, like a scary movie. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Welcome in to the Maggie and Perloff Show. Sit down, get comfortable, stay a while. We've been talking a lot of football today, lots and lots of football, and rightfully so, but we have not yet hit the Dallas Cowboys, which is a crime in most of the lower 48 states. So a lot going on in Dallas today. Mike McCarthy at the podium, I think just finishing up. The biggest takeaways from that are he's had conversations with Jerry Jones, and they've all been very positive. So I think we can probably once and for all put a bow on the fact that Mike McCarthy is going to be returning next year as the Cowboys head coach.
Which we really should have done right after the game when Jerry said, let's put it on the table. And then when Steven said he's confident he's coming back. But we all knew Jerry Jones' loyalty was going to win the day. I think the nation was mad at Mike McCarthy for screwing up the end of that game. But Jerry Jones is not going to go off a coach who won 12 games a regular season.
Yeah, I think it's more not about what they did in the regular season. I think that there's a loyalty and a pride thing. Like, no. We didn't get it wrong.
Yes.
We didn't get it wrong here. We're going to get this thing figured out. Meanwhile, I'm sure the problems in Dallas, I think, run a lot deeper than anyone knows. But there was some more coming out of Dallas yesterday. So Obviously, Dak Prescott got in a lot of hot water because he was asked about post-game when the fans, some fans, were throwing things onto the field. And he said, you know, stock answer, it's not good. You know, we love our fans, but, you know, don't want to show it in that way. And they said, no, 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 they weren't throwing the stuff at you. They were throwing it at the refs. He goes, oh, well, in that case, I'm all for it. He got a lot of backlash. So he apologized on Twitter. I deeply regret the comments I made regarding the officials after the game on Sunday. I was caught up in the emotion of a disappointing loss. My words were uncalled for and unfair.
Do you buy it?
Yeah. I mean, fine. If I were him, I probably would have sent this Monday. Yourself two news cycles of getting crushed, because you could see the apology was going to be coming at some point. And so he finally got around to that.
Well, okay. I think people were worried about precedent here. If Dak Prescott okays for fans to throw things at the field, what happens next? Somebody could get really hurt.
Yeah, but, you know, then it's like personal responsibility. You know, it's like, aren't you responsible for what you do, let alone what Dak Prescott says?
Yeah, I mean, you immediately gave him a pass. You said in the heat of the moment, after a loss like that, you could understand it. And actually, I understood
about what he said, not about like people actually throwing stuff on the field.
I think it's an important distinction about that game. The officials did make one mistake on the last play. He should have been closer to the play.
Yeah.
A lot of experts have said that. But overall, I felt like that game, the officials did not have to insert themselves as much. How many holds on defensive holds on run plays? How do you hold a guy on a run play?
Well, but that's been Dallas's MO all year. They've been the most penalized team in the NFL. So it's like, were the refs doing something wrong or were the Cowboys doing something
wrong? Or did the refs come into that game with a storyline? Because I saw a lot of the holds and they were borderline. They were not no-brainer holds. There were a few that were, but it struck me that the officials were being overly aggressive. I thought playoffs, you were supposed to sort of swallow the whistle. It was not that at all. I understood Dak's frustration. I thought the game was too closely officiated.
Well, there was another former Dallas quarterback who was also very frustrated about that game, but it wasn't about the final play. It was about the game plan in general on the offensive side of the ball, and that is Troy Aikman, who was on what radio station, Mike? Thank you so much. And here's what he had to say about the Cowboys' offensive game plan.
There was a lot of single coverage on CeeDee Lamb. It was back when I was playing, and I hate going back to that point because nobody cares. But what I see around the leagues, not just Dallas, it was in Philadelphia, I've seen it with a lot of teams, that a lot of these offenses, they want to scheme things. The coordinators just, it's all about scheme. Rather than this corner is playing soft, he's scared to death, just run the route tree. Just run a comeback. Run a dig route. Run a curl. Run anything. And you're going to complete the pass whenever you want. Irvin would have had 10 catches at halftime if they had played us the way that they played CeeDee Lamb in that game. So I just don't quite understand that. It's interesting. The game's not that difficult. If I've got a great player at wide receiver and a corner is playing him single coverage, throw him the ball. Yeah. You know, he's going to win most of the time.
Wow. I remember with Troy Aikman when he was throwing for 5,000-6,000 yards a year and 45 touchdowns. Michael Irvin getting what is he talking about? Troy Aikman has gotten better and better in his old age at the mic. He just shreds every quarterback who's not Aaron Rodgers. Basically, you're going to get killed by Troy Aikman. And Troy Aikman, of course, would have seen every play. Troy, you had no numbers at Dallas. All you did was hand it off to Emmitt Smith for 10 years.
Wait, but hold on. Does that mean what he said wasn't right? I mean, wasn't it very noticeable? There was actually a CeeDee Lamb catch in the first half that got negated by a penalty. But wasn't it noticeable how absent he was in that game plan? I mean, I think what Troy's saying has some merit here, which is, you know, at some point, throw the ball to your best player and let him make a play.
That's absolutely right. And the same thing, he was right about the Eagles game. They should have thrown the ball to Devontae Smith more.
Right.
But he's dismissing scheme when, I hate to say it, look around the NFL right now. You have a lot of scheme.
Why do you think the 49ers are where they are?
Yeah, you have a lot of scheme heavy. Yeah, the 49ers don't have the talent to have that offense. They moved their wide receiver to running back.
Yeah.
So I think every case is different. I just think Troy is, playing Monday morning quarterback here a little bit, too.
Well, I mean, but fair enough, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I like the fact that Troy does get, you know, very honest about the quarterbacks, as, you know, he is willing to kind of rip guys a little bit on the air. He's willing to at least, you know, critique them. It never gets personal. But I get where he's coming from in that, you know, you're through three quarters, you got 7 points. Get your best players involved here. I mean, no offense to Dalton Schultz, but like that's when they were finally able to start moving the balls, when they started to find him. Meanwhile, you've got these other weapons. You know, I just couldn't tell if it was the wide receivers just simply not getting open, But I think Dak really had a terrible game. Dak, Kellen Moore, McCarthy, they all had bad games.
Yeah, it's an easy one to pick on the Cowboys. But I'm telling you, Troy does this all year long. Anytime there's a guy 20 yards downfield, he doesn't know the play call.
That's
true. And he's not in the headset. He's not in the headset. He doesn't really know what the coach is doing. Troy should be, you know, Troy has talked about wanting to run a team. Like, Troy, get out of the booth. I want to see you, coach, if you're such a genius. I feel like he's just getting, and I like Troy. His analysis is really sharp. There's no doubt about it. And he's the only one of those.
Doesn't sound like you like him.
Well,
it sounds like you're ripping him.
I don't like the way he's overcritical of quarterbacks. I think that he sometimes sees the game like, oh, of course I would have made that pass. But he is the only one of the big-time guys who will rip the refs, which I like. I feel like we saw Drew Brees hold back, obviously, NBC.
Well, Drew's Raiders. Also is new with this.
But Collinsworth and Tony Romo do not rip the refs like Troy. Troy's probably too honest, so I see what you're saying. Obviously, it's easy to say you should have thrown the ball to CeeDee Lamb, but every game that Troy does, if the quarterback's not doing well, he's like, oh, he should hit that guy 20 yards downfield. It's not always that easy, and he didn't do it himself. You know, someone just gave me a stat that Tom Brady threw more TDs after 40 than Troy threw his whole career. I'm looking at his, do you know what his career rating was? It was like in the 60s, I believe. He was not this prolific, pass-heavy quarterback, and now he said, I could make every throw that these guys are making.
Well, he's not the only former Cowboy luminary to weigh in on the status of the team and show their dissatisfaction. Of all people, Jimmy Johnson taken to Twitter. So Fox Sports had put up a tweet that said, Dak Prescott now has the same playoff record that Tony Romo had through his first six seasons of being the starting quarterback for the Cowboys. And it's 1-3 in their first six seasons as a starter. And the way that Fox has the graphic is like the guys are kind of like in dark shades, you know, like shaded darkly. It's like definitely a downer stat. And Jimmy, of course it is. 1-3 is not a good postseason record. But Jimmy Johnson quote tweeted and just wrote, a shame, ... I'll tell you what, how much is this parent vibes? It's like when your parents tell you like, I'm not even angry, I'm just disappointed. It's like, oh, I'd rather you be angry. Because disappointed, like that's going to weigh on me forever. This is Jimmy coming in, being dad, just looking at the Cowboys like I can't even be angry anymore. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, I couldn't quite understand what he meant. Is he sort of saying you should have kept me all along and none of this would have happened?
I think that's every Jimmy Johnson conversation at some point.
Right, so there's still some bitterness. I mean, I know he likes the Cowboys, but he's still basically, are him and Jerry on the same page these days?
I don't think they talked.
I think they did an interview recently.
I don't think that he's in their Ring of Honor yet, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought
Can
that they had reconciled.
Can you double check that, Mike?
He's actually not. And
are you
a big
on the air
thing.
Right now, or are you in my ear?
I'm actually on the air.
Okay, good.
He's not yet, and Jerry this past offseason at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony said, we're going to get you in. Since then, Jimmy Johnson has not even heard from Jerry about potentially when or how they're going to do it. So this has been a big thing that he's not putting him in. He promised that he would get him in, and Jerry's heard crickets since.
Wow.
So he's throwing shade there with that tweet.
Oh, definitely. But imagine that. You're like, we're going to get you in here one of these days in a while. In a few. Just got a couple things to do. Got to get a couple other people in, but not the coach. Who won two Super Bowls.
Yeah, well, Jimmy doesn't have to worry. He was obviously the brightest person in that building because Jerry hasn't won a Super Bowl since he left.
Yeah.
I mean, that battle was
history.
Over a long time ago.
Yeah, history has kind of declared a winner there.
I think that's why Jerry wants to win so badly with Mike McCarthy. Like, you know, I think Jerry thought he finally figured it out this time around. You know, I think he thought, I brought in a Super Bowl winning coach from Green Bay. I think he had high expectations this year. You heard it. Stephen Jones, Moore, was saying, like, this was the team we thought we were going to win it all. But were they really going to? Were they ever going to win it all?
Well, ask yourself if this is inspiring confidence. Here's Mike McCarthy on the final play from Sunday.
As far as Dak sliding, giving the ball to the center can spot the ball. The receiver can spot the ball. So the fact that the opinion of you can't spot the ball is not correct. We had great confidence in that situation. So it's the right call based on our preparation. We just got to really look at the mechanics and the timing of that too. So it's a 13-second threshold is the call. So at 14 seconds, it's, in my view, the right call.
Yes. Yes, the timing. Yes, and the mechanics, like, yeah, that's what we're all saying, man. Like, of course, you can hand the ball to whoever you want, but we all know that the referee, well, I know now, the referee has to touch the ball before the play. So, yes, of course it was the time and the mechanics. Man, if I'm Jerry, I'm listening to that. How could you feel good? Wow, also, you're the head coach. You're the one who's responsible for things like timing and mechanics.
Yeah, there were so many mistakes there. And all that being said, I felt like there was a moment where if Dak had just moved a little quicker at the very end, he could have gotten the ball in. It was so close. I feel. No, and
the
by
referee
the way,
bounced off of his butt.
Yeah, that was just. I'm not going to kill McCarthy for that play, believe it or not. And I'll tell you why. There's no way they were throwing a touchdown on that play or the previous play. They weren't going to score. It was still an impossible. They had a 1% probability of coming out of that.
You never know.
I know you're not going to throw the odds of hitting a 45-yard pass with no time left is not good.
No, but that's what they wanted to even run the final plays because they didn't want to do the Hail Mary. They wanted to do the four verts.
So not a bad idea if it had worked. I can't believe
it. How many things through history could we put on that?
Here's what happened. I'm playing devil's advocate because we had Mike Sielski on for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're talking about Kobe. My Philly-ness is coming out, and I can't help but have my anti-Dallas sentiment. And I do admit I enjoyed a little bit of this whole train wreck that was our final game.
You know, I don't think that's a Philly thing. I think there was a lot of people who were very pleased that Dallas lost.
And how they lost, too.
Yeah. No, there's people who take pleasure in that. It's about Dallas losing. It's about the Yankees losing. It's about Duke losing.
Totally.
Notre Dame. The infamous fan bases.
Yeah. And
I got to be honest, though. Some people think that about the Philadelphia fan base.
Oh, as they should. Also, the way it ended, people are tweeting out, is this the funniest ending to any football game you've ever seen? I mean, the official ran in there. I just laughed thinking about it. Ran into the quarterback, ran into the center. It was awesome.
Meanwhile, the Dallas fan just left there like, what did we do to deserve this? You didn't do anything. It's not your fault. The one NFL storyline that's getting way too much hype. That's coming your way next.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.